you were told by the coach of the other team that you have your actions in the game have brought shame to you, to your country,
whoa,
and to your people. How many things can you do in your life, Yoni, can bring shame to you as a person?
בן שלך ישחוט אותך ביום הולדת שלך, יא אבו ג'ילדו שכמוך.
Exactly. People climbed the Everest. You brought shame to the entire Jewish people. של הוטדוג, פודקאסט הבייסבול הראשון בעברית עם יוני לב-ארי ואנוכי ארז שעד. שלום יוני.
מה קורה ארז?
קצת מקורב, תודה.
להביא לך את הפולובר האפור?
לא, לא, לא. אתמול גמרתי את הגרון ב-14 מעלות בכפר הבפטיסטים. כן, הם גמרו אותי. והמשדר הוא מספר 214.
מה אתה אומר?
גאט אורגר. מגיע אליכם בחסות טטרש, מסחר ויבוא עצים. כל סוגי העצים מכל רחבי העולם ובאיכות יוצאת דופן. בקרו אותנו בכתובת דרך בן צבי 20 ביפו או באינטרנט טים הקפרד או ציוד או טייל, כי המחירים שלנו הם לא בדיחת קרש.
נכון.
קצת יותר התלהבות.
נכון!
יוני, אתה יודע מה קורה היום?
מה קורה היום? היום יום שישי.
כן. היום אנחנו מתחילים את פרויקט הפגרה החגיגי שלנו. הבייסבול הישראלי, תמונת מצב.
כאילו אמרת, אתה נותן לי חודש להתאושש מהוורד סיריאס. זהו, עברת את זה, בסדר, שכחנו מהבלום של ג'אג', אפשר להתחיל את הסק.
בדיוק.
יאללה.
אז אנחנו מפותחים דווקא במה שנקרא ווילד פיץ'.
ממש.
וזה, חשבתם שנביא שחקנים, מאמנים, לא, we have an umpire. Hello, Mr. Daniel Ryblewski. Did I say that right?
Yes, that was perfect.
Okay, first of all, what the hell is that name?
A Polish name.
Yeah, I know. It's a Polish name.
My grandparents went to America. Then they had my...
And how did you came to America and they didn't tell her, no, it's Rebel or Rubly or Rubelstein or something?
No, it was very meaningful to the family. I'll tell you, when my parents got divorced...
All right.
The one thing that my father put in the get was that my mother could not influence the children to change their name. It was very important.
Wow. Wow, what does it mean?
It means son of a sparrow.
All right.
Very common.
I mean, people look at you and they immediately think of sparrows and small birds.
Yes.
Now, you're an umpire in the league?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You don't have to...
Thing.
Yeah, I told
if you would say no, we'd have a big problem here.
No, I mean, you don't have to admit anything, but you're an umpire, and you came to us in your capacity as an umpire, and we're going to talk a little about that. But before that...
Yeah. You have a question?
Yes, I have a question.
Do you have birthdays?
Tony Lazzeri, Joko Conlan, Larry Boa. Larry Boa.
Yeah.
Expos.
It was a Phillies manager.
It was affiliate?
Maybe.
And we have Stan Hack. Wasn't Stan Hack the guy we talked about last 2 weeks ago?
I don't remember.
But the Crush Davis of the Pirates.
Oh, yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, that's an interesting question. Name two of the following managers who beat a team in the World Series and later managed them.
Wow, that's nice.
So you have Bucky Harris. You have greatest Yankee coach Joe Girardi. Now, who did you beat in 2009?
The Phillies.
Well, he's a candidate because he managed the Phillies.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Frankie Frisch and Johnny Keane. Now, I only know Bucky Harris and obviously Joe Girardi. I have no idea who the other two are. You familiar with the names?
No, I have no idea.
Okay, so everybody pick one.
Okay, I'll let the guests. Who do you want? Bucky Harris, Frankie Frisch, or Johnny Keane?
I like Frankie Frisch because he sounds Jewish.
Right, right. You know, we'll talk about your ancestry in a moment. Yoni, Keane, or Harris? Because we know Girardi is true.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go with Harris.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll go with Trump. no, just nice. Kidding. Johnny Keane. Okay. We'll find the answers at the end of the episode. So, Daniel, how did you come to fall in love with baseball? What happened?
I was a little kid and I would go to the ball games.
Where are you from originally?
Oh, I'm from New York City.
All right.
And so, I remember I was very young and I had, just like this jersey that I'm wearing now, I'm wearing the Grom jersey.
Everyone put up your volume so you can see what he's wearing. We'll have a picture later.
But when I was a kid, I wore number 4. So that was Ron Swoboda.
Oh, not...
So I was very excited about that. So I had my own uniform.
So you grew up a Mets fan?
A Mets fan.
Where were
I mean, the Yankees
Queens?
Were fine. I didn't hate the Yankees.
So you basically...
That's not a good thing.
No, because, I mean, at those times, there were two different leagues. So you basically had an American League team and a National League team.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to go to Queens and take the 7 train, so you could go to Shea... Or if you wanted to go to Yankee Stadium and take the 4, you could go there. It depended what you could get tickets for.
And you were where? Brooklyn?
I lived in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
No.
Okay.
Not in New York. Not in the boroughs.
Not in the boroughs.
As we called them.
Yeah. In New York. It's like what, 70s?
My mother had an apartment. No. Later on, she had an apartment on 69th and 3rd. But we had an apartment when I was growing up east of York. On 72nd Street, no, overlooking the East River.
When were the years?
Years. What the which years. Year were you there?
So I was in first.
The 70s.
I was in first grade, so this is tough to remember.
so long.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, okay, that's like good Mets years.
Yeah. Good Mets years. Ron Swoboda, Buddy Harrelson.
Like 6-7 years before you were only a Yankee fan.
Right. Tom, I wasn't too old at that point. So.
Yeah, who was your favorite player?
Ron Swoboda.
Why?
And of course, you know
that name. I know him.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, he was. I mean, he was an important player.
He were on the 69 team, but it's not like the Severs or the the big names.
Is there Akbayani of the 60?
No.
He had some important hits. And of course, he's famous for this catch that he made.
When did you leave the U.S.?
I left in 2002. I was probably 39. So with my wife and child, and we came here.
That's the first thing to do when you get married and have a child, move to another country.
To Israel.
Any other country.
Not just other country, to Israel.
Well, the benefit is you get a citizenship and some money, I guess.
Yeah, money. I don't think it makes up for the money we lost.
No, obviously. So, Zionism, or you were chased out of New York with pitch bombs?
I know people who actually were chased out of New York. but my wife is quite a Zionist. She always wanted to go to Israel. Mm. And once we had a child, she wanted to go before our daughter was too old, so... Mm. When she was 4 years old, when my daughter was 4 years old, we moved.
Yeah, not your wife.
Not my wife. And that'd be another story.
If you were in Atlanta, that would be a different story.
And then I met Leon. I don't know how. I don't know how I got roped into this. But somehow I met Leon.
You meet Leon and weird things start happening. I think we notice a pattern here. Did you play baseball professionally or in some capacity?
No, well, I went to school in Manhattan, mm-hmm. so it doesn't have a lot of ball fields. I played a little bit of softball in Central Park, but otherwise I didn't play baseball. I was a basketball guy.
Well, obviously. Yeah. How tall are you?
I am 6'5", 195 meters.
Not bad.
That's not bad.
My son is actually taller than me.
Small forward.
Yeah.
my son is actually 2 meters.
Wow.
And my daughter is 192, which is probably the most unusual.
Yeah, it is. So she can play in the WNBA with
with Caitlin Carr.
So are your kids into sports or? My son
played on baseball for a while.
Then?
But I don't know. Then he went to the army, and that was that. My daughter was walking down the street, and some volleyball coach walked up to her and said, "Well, you want to play volleyball?" And for three years,
obviously.
For 3 years, she played volleyball.
Obviously, with that height, she's going to be a very good defender.
Yeah,
I think. So Leon ropes you in, and all of a sudden, you find yourself umpiring games.
Yeah, I mean, I must have gone through his course. I have no recollection of it, but I must have gone through his course.
Yeah, obviously, if I see you umpiring, you notice you have no recollection of the rules, but no, just, I'm kidding.
So I sort of fell in love with it because I feel like it combines three different personality types mm-hmm. in a single position. So one, you have to be sort of type A, anal, retentive, kind of person to right. deal with the rules.
Right.
You have to know all the rules and all the minutiae and all of that. But then every game is different. And we were talking about box earlier, right? And, you know, is this a... I know the rules of box, but is this really a box? Should I call it in this position? So you have to apply those very, very precise rules to very sort of imprecise people and situations, right? So that's the second thing. And the third thing is there's a very social aspect, and I don't mean like making friends per se, but part of your job, it's not enough to be right.
Right.
You have to convince people that you're right. And therefore, there's a social aspect that says I have to, you know, I have to get along with people,
right.
and I have to convince them that I know what I'm doing, which has nothing to do with rules or applications of rules. Just dealing with coaches and players.
Because we often see, you made a call, and one of the coaches run into and wants an explanation. Now, he cannot change the call, but he argues as if he can. And once you finish explaining to him, now the other coach comes in and wants to know what's the ruckus about. And you have to convey what happens. And so it's kind of weird, like, and the call is stands. It will not change. I mean, occasionally you do change calls. But the call stands, but you still have to, let's say, explain yourself to the other guys.
Right. There's explaining them, but it happens before that. So there was something, after I took Leon's course and umpired for a while, I went to the Wendelstedt School in Florida, which is the training place for professional umpires.
Wow.
And one of the things they teach you is making... or answering the question not yet asked, right? Yeah. So once the manager or the coach comes onto the field and starts arguing, everybody else can see it, the tension sort of builds, everybody gets excited.
Which is fun.
Which is fun. On the other hand, you want to avoid, you know, confrontations right. and people fighting and all that kind of stuff. So one of the things you have to do is to anticipate what somebody will question you about,
right.
okay? So let's say you call a balk, for example, there are signals that you can give that explain why you called the balk.
Right.
Or...
To the manager.
To the manager and to every
player.
And to everybody.
And to the player, you need to tell him what he did wrong.
Right.
Would you give a warning to a pitcher if you think he's balking, let's say, okay, just spin around and made a throw which was, let's say, borderline? Would you tell him, listen, next time you do this, it's a balk? Or you say, okay, you made an error,
You're not supposed to, I think.
Well, you're not supposed to, but would you? I mean, especially since we are not a professional league.
Right, so the higher the level,
right,
the less I'm going to talk to him, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So in the PL, I don't think I would say anything.
Okay? Right.
But as you get further down...
That's the high level.
That's the PL. That's our highest level. Yeah. But once you get further down... Particularly in the cadets, let's say. Once you get to the cadets, you likely would give them a warning, or earlier in the season, you would...
Explaining things?
Certainly explaining things.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, I always say, I mean, in my profession as a programmer, I always say, your client comes to you and said, I want you, this product to do ABC. And I always tell people, don't listen to what he says, listen to what he needs. So what basically anticipate what he's really talking about. He's saying, I want this button to do that thing. And I'm thinking, what do you really want? What is the underlying reason for you asking this? Because otherwise, sometimes you can, it's, well, we can't do that. Or you want to say, well, we can't do that, but we can give you what you want in a different way. So you're basically thinking, why is this coach coming to me? Maybe he's... He wants to show his players that he defends them, or maybe wants to assert some sort of wants to show you up and make you a little bit worry about calling things. So
that's exactly right. So you want to anticipate what he might get angry about, mm-hmm. okay? And one of the ways to tell, like, a really, really good umpire is when they say nothing happened. Okay? So oftentimes, runners running from first to second, and there's a ground ball, and it almost hits him, or he's very close to the fielder, but you don't think there was any interference or obstruction.
Right.
Okay? So you will make a safe call. You will point at it, and you will say, that's nothing. Okay?
Right.
And part of the reason you do that is because the coach is going to think, oh, you didn't see what was going on. You don't know what you're doing. So by saying, I saw it, I think it's nothing, you prevent the coach from coming on. Now, they may still come on. They may still want to argue it. But probably 80% of the inclination of the coach to come on is eliminated, and he won't come on.
So I think gesturing, and I was laughing. I said, what are you pointing on? And I was like, what are you pointing? Because I'm trying to say the safe or the out call. And I'm like, but and you're right. You have to say, I saw this, but this is my verdict, or this is what happened.
Right, you'll see this at first base all the time. So so it looks like the throw beat the guy, but his foot was off. So you have to indicate the foot was off, or he dropped the ball, or he juggled the ball.
Now, I'm insane. I mean, I would think calling outs on first base, you don't see it. It's 9 out of 10 times bang, bang. And it's like, so they tell me you work on basically on sound. You hear the sound of the ball and the sound of the foot, or are you just looking? Because you can't look at three things at the same time.
Right.
So what are you looking at?
You're looking at the bag. So you see the foot on the bag. You hear the catch, and you see the foot of the runner. Okay. Mm. And it's really amazing. And this is a difficult thing. I still have a difficult time. But you need to be completely still. And if you can be completely still,
right.
It's amazing how you can call those bang bang plays.
We see those things, we just don't process them. And when you're focused and in the zone, so the point is, you're basically a player. You're basically playing a game. Well, even more than the other players, because they sit for half of it and you have to stand. So you're basically in the game. You're playing a game of baseball. It's the closest you get to being an athlete, and you influence the result. Well, you not in the way of the pitching and the hitting, but you influence the result because you call it, and what you call is the would be the end result of the game.
I think of it slightly differently.
Right.
Yes, it's true that in the end we may influence the game.
Now, I'm but not, we're, I don't mean it in the bad way. I mean it as because there was I don't remember who it was, third base coach. And he said he wanted to be third base coach because that's the closest he can get to be in the game. Because he have to watch everything like a defender. He have to, give the guy the green light, the red light. He have to do a lot of things which involves him in the game in the way he couldn't do from the bench or any other way. And he's obviously an older guy, so he can't play. So being an umpire is basically the closest you can be to play the game. Even if you're not good at hitting or pitching, you need to be focused and you need to know the rules.
I don't know if you intended this to be a lead-in to our umpire course coming
Everything
up.
Everything is intended here. So yeah,
I'm sure it is. It's also interesting that sometimes I listen to, I can't get it so much anymore, but ESPN Radio I listen to. And they have these ads about, do you want to be not just an umpire, but any kind of official?
Right.
And they talk about, you used to play and it was really great, but, colleges didn't come and you couldn't play professional. So, the next best thing is to be an umpire and be part of the game. So
you came here to pitch the umpiring course?
Yes, I came to pitch something.
Amazing how those things happen. So tell us about it a bit.
Sure. So before I tell you about the course and how to become an umpire and all that kind of stuff, you can see in the league in general that the level of play...
we're talking about PL.
I'm talking about the entire Israel baseball.
Okay.
In all the leagues, that the level of play has gotten higher, that they've achieved quite a bit in the European tournaments.
Right.
Most notably, the last one was in the Little League tournament in Poland, in the, I guess it's the Europe, I don't know if it's the Europe-Africa qualifier, but it was the Europe qualifier. They had never been there, or maybe this was the second year.
They crushed teams there.
So they had to go through the qualifier. So right. The qualifier, they crushed like 60 runs to two or something like right. that.
And I spoke to Peter Kurtz, who is your boss, I think, at the moment. he said that they sent four youth teams in different ages, Little League 21, 18, 23. And each team basically ate the opponent and spat them. I watched the U23 game, and I mean, that was like, it was so insane. They had Bobrov throw two innings, and then they had to replace him. Aviv. He threw two innings, and then he had to be replaced because he sat down for so long. He sat down for like an hour because his team would not stop adding.
Yeah.
So they had to replace him, so we only got him for two innings the entire tournament.
That's a shame.
Yeah, but we did see Ivry lay down the law a bit. Ivry was also...
So I think all of the levels have succeeded. Mm-hmm. I just point out the Little League because it was either their first or second time completely in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to go through the qualifying tournament the week before, right. And they won 60-2. Mm-hmm. And then they went through the second tournament, the qualifier for Williamsport, and they came within two games,
which is the playoffs of Little League baseball in the United States.
Right, right.
So you can actually promote to play Little League tournaments in the U.S. if you.
Well, I mean, that's like the World Series, right? The World Series of Little League. And that's a big thing. It's on television. They have Ravage.
Kyle Ravage from ESPN. He does that still.
It's become this huge thing now.
Yeah, I know.
And I love watching it. It's just very, like, the kids are so innocent and all kinds of fun things happen.
Yeah,
strangely, the umpires are not so great, you know, on this big, big tournament. I think they're all volunteers. The whole Little League system is all based on volunteers.
Where are they good?
Yeah, the umpires? Yeah. Oh, that was me. Anyway, so all of Israel based.
Seriously, we see guys like, you know, Angel Hernandez, the world's worst, CB Buckner, the world's Les Diaz, the world's worst umpires, and they are right 91%.
I still think it's amazing the older umpires how good they are, but the younger umpires are even better now.
Yeah, so all these young umpires. So let's go back to we can go on many tangents.
Okay, so I just want to finish with the Little League. So the Little League then went to the tournament, and they came within two games of being in the Little League World Series,
which is amazing.
In America, and they lost to Germany, which is the European Championship champions of 12-year-old. I think 12 and under baseball.
Nice.
So and then the Germans, I was at that tournament. I umpired at the tournament, the under 12 tournament for the European Championship,
mm-hmm.
Which was in Paderborn, Germany. It was really an unbelievable experience.
Yeah, and we're talking about Germany has not a professional, but they have leagues. They have real leagues. They have. Their baseball union is like professional. It's not volunteers and speed and duct tape like we have here.
Do you have any German in the majors?
That's a Schrempf, I think.
In the big leagues.
Very good. Yeah.
Anyway, so Germany, Netherlands, those are usually the best teams.
Yeah, Netherlands.
So they lost to Germany, I think, in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. But amazing,
the first or second
year that they're in this tournament, they come within two games to Williamsport. So my feeling is that the entire league has raised its game, and I feel like it's important for the umpires to raise its game, or to raise their game, and improve, partly to have a more professional league, but I think the better the umpires are, I think the better the players are, mm-hmm. and they understand mm-hmm. the game better. And it prepares them better for
especially in the lower levels.
Especially at the lower levels, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just but to your question, Max Kepler and Brandon Donovan.
Max Kepler is German. Oh,
yeah, he was born in Berlin.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
He's real German.
Yeah.
Oh.
So now, because the level is so high, we need better umpires. That's what you're saying.
The level is high, we need better umpires, but I think the better umpires you have will raise the level of the play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Obviously. It goes together.
They'll have to be more precise. again, talking about box, they will have to not be lazy in how they do their movements. They'll have to think of the game situation a little bit more.
So how do we do it?
How do we do it? So the first thing was I went to the Wendelstadt School. I learned sort of the tricks of the trade about how to be a good umpire. And that was the first thing. And to really research it, I follow this channel, Close Call Sports, on YouTube, which gives you a lot of insight into how to do a lot of good umpiring. And there are a couple other YouTube channels that are really, really good. There's a guy in Indiana who does a lot of training of umpires for Little League, and he has videos that are really, really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is to recruit more umpires to teach them.
So the question is, how many umpires do we have today in Israel?
Not a lot.
Well, in terms of umpires that do junior, that are senior umpires, there's basically me, David, Ross, and Mark. Okay?
Four guys.
There's four guys. David Schenker. So David Taylor.
David Taylor.
Right. That's the little guy, right?
Hmm? Yeah, that's the little guy.
No, taller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taylor.
Yeah, taller and taller.
You can't compare him to me. Okay. So
is one of the softball baseball guys.
Also. Yeah, right. He does a lot of softball. So we really don't have a lot. All of us are, you know,
elderly. David Schenker has basically been prevented from retiring due to Jody keeps coming to him every year and with a gun and said, if you retire, I will shoot you. So he said, okay, I'll sign for another year. That's basically what
I think David enjoys it too much, and I think David wants to continue.
And he also enjoyed quenching about how he wants to retire. That's the point.
So it's a win-win.
Yeah.
So we need some more umpires, particularly adult umpires. Sometimes we train like junior players, right. But then of course they go to the army or they go to, you know, yeshiva for a couple of years, and yeah, they're not around so much. So that's what we want to do. We want to recruit a few more umpires and also train them to a higher level than they've been before. And we want to eventually filter this down into the lower league. So we want to also train the younger guys who are doing the Little League or the cadet games in the regions.
Interesting.
And Ross is helping us have an effort to go into the regions and do a small clinic to raise the level of the younger umpires as well.
And what do you get when you become an umpire in the league? If you manage to grow to excel in the course and prove yourself to be a man of honor and justice and the American way of life, what do you get there?
You get a great sense of satisfaction.
Well, okay, but as I said, you get to play the game.
You get to be in the game. It's
nice.
So let me say the specific.
I'm dying here.
Let me tell you the specific. So first of all, we pay money. You know,
obviously. You don't do that for free.
You know, I think generally, if you do a junior or senior game and you're a first time umpire, you probably get 150 shekels for the game. If you are a senior umpire, it's 200 or 225, plus there's a little allowance for travel expense. So that's what you get per game.
That's good.
Okay, so if you umpired, let's say, twice a week, so two evenings a week for a month, so it could be a couple thousand shekels.
That's nice.
Okay, we will subsidize or pay for, give you equipment. So if you're a first-time umpire doing the juniors or seniors, we will give you equipment.
You get all the cool gear and the helmets and the bodyguard and all that stuff.
And we will also pay your way when you get to a level where you want to do international tournaments. So there's a clinic or a course at the WBSC, the European Baseball Association.
World.
What?
W is world. In the European WBSC.
So this is done by the WBSC Europe.
All right,
runs a clinic. They've done it in France the last couple of years.
I know American thinks they are the world, but the European have a better understanding of
not
the globe.
They had.
Well,
So anyway, they run a clinic in the European Association runs a clinic. Last couple of years, they've done it in France. I've heard it's a really good clinic. So if you want to do international baseball, we can send you to this clinic for a week. I think the IAB would pay your airfare. Relatively inexpensive, but the IAB would subsidize that.
Right.
And then once you do that, you're qualified to do international tournaments. And I can tell you that
it's just fun. You just came from one, didn't you?
Yes, I did. What did I do? I was in Paderborn, Germany, which is this beautiful town, a couple hours north of Frankfurt,
mm-hmm.
for the U12. And then this was very exciting. I went to a small little Irish town a half hour from Dublin to do the qualifier, or one of the qualifiers, for the senior national team.
Wow.
So these guys will go to the European Championships next year. I forget who won it. I think it was Austria. But it was a beautiful time. And I was able... It's always a thing that... there's sort of you umpire in the field or behind the plate with different partners, and then on the last game, on the finals, they pick who they consider the best umpire to be behind the plate and also to be in the field.
Nice.
And I was picked to be the plate umpire for the finals.
Seriously?
So that was very exciting.
Did you get something for that?
the satisfaction.
The adoration of your peers.
No. It was a very big deal because
like you're getting to play the postseason. You know, bring in the good players, not the good umpires, not the good, not the Uncle Hernandez.
I mean, for me, it was important because now I applied to be to do the Pony League, which is sort of it's an important tournament, somewhat lower than the WBSC, mm-hmm. but it's a very fun tournament in Prague. Prague's a beautiful city, and they have this huge baseball facility outside of Prague. Mm. And so when I applied to do it, I said, you should know that I did the WBSC, and I was selected to be behind the plate, and that's what it was mainly good for. But it was also very exciting, and it felt really good to know that I could umpire at a quality level.
Let's say I just heard that and I'm like, where do I sign? So where do I sign?
Yeah.
Where do you sign? Okay. you can send an email to daniel@baseball.org.il.
Right.
Okay, so daniel@baseball.org.il.
All right.
Or you can WhatsApp me. Can I give my phone number?
No, don't.
Okay.
No. People, if anyone is interested, they can, and they can't function, can have a, don't have an email account,
they
just
can contact us
through the Facebook, site.
And then, what happens next if somebody contacts you? I love baseball. I have like spare time. I want to do something. I never umped. I don't know the rules, like, you know, by the book. What do you do with me?
Okay, so we will have a course January 5th, 12th, and 19th. So that's Sunday evening at 6:30 for 2-3 hours at Baptist Village in Petah Tikva.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the first thing. We'll have bring your coat. We'll have one or two Zoom sessions, mostly about the rules. And once that happens, we'll assign you a mentor. So one of the other senior umpires will follow you and give you advice. And we will assign you some games, probably at the cadet level, just to make sure that everything is fine. And then we'll bring you up quickly to the juniors and seniors.
Yeah, and it's have to remember it's on you. I mean, they can give you. You have to be able to learn the rules and.
It's work, right?
Yeah, sure. It is. It's not. It's not. It can be fun, but it has to. There's nothing like you don't come tabula rasa and they pour umpiring into you, and you need to learn. You need to do homework. You need to study. Go to all the sites, Umpire's Bible, and the thing you said, what was that, Close Call?
Close Call Sports.
Close Call Sports and all that. It's fascinating. As a person who's very much in love with that aspect of baseball, that is, to me, that's fascinating. And we talked about there were like three levels of the game. There was the game itself, the players hitting and running and throwing. There's the umpiring level, the rules which... dictates whatever happened on the field, what happened. I mean, somebody threw the ball, somebody hit the ball, and then he ran, and people ran all over the place. And then you're supposed to say, okay, the umpire, don't look at me like that. And the umpire says, okay, that guy's out, that guy's safe, that guy's... So basically you tell everyone what happened. And then you have this next level, which is the scoring, which is attributing, you know, okay, that's a hit, that's an error, that's a fielder's choice, that's a thing.
The scoring I could never do. Whoever can do scoring is like a genius. So a couple of things you said. One is, yes, there's a little bit of work. I mean, you have to read the rules. You have to study the rules.
It's more than a little bit, I guess.
Yes, more than little bit.
But once you understand how things work, the logic behind them.
Yeah, but the thing that when you're coming as an umpire to a game, they expect you to be able to answer every question there is there, right? You need to know everything that happens there. Okay. There are some little things that not everybody knows.
But there are edge cases.
Me and you, we see baseball for 25 years, so it's easier for us. Not everybody, you know, knows like that.
I think it's helpful to know a little bit about the game. You know, a new umpire is not going to know everything, so maybe they won't be the chief umpire of the game.
Right.
Or the umpire in chief, I think technically it's called. And
yeah, it's supposed to start as a secondary.
Right. But I mean, very, very quickly, we do want you to be behind the plate and be the umpire in chief. So it's not like, okay, you're going to do it for a couple of years. I mean, mm-hmm. very soon we want you to be behind the plate. It's something you grow into a little bit.
Yeah,
and it'll take a little experience.
It's a challenge.
But I think if you come to it and say, and this is where game management is very important, to go on the field. I'll tell you something they said at the Paderborn tournament at the U12. There was an umpire supervisor, and he was like encouraging us and say, okay, go out there and whatever. And he said, if you're going to make a mistake, make it big. Don't be hesitant, right? And if you think the guy balked, so just say he balked. And if it turns out you made a mistake, so you made a mistake. And you can't be afraid.
You need to show authority.
You need to show authority, and you can't be scared. Okay? Yeah. And over time, you'll, I always tell this story over and over again about, I was in chemistry class, and there was an exam, and I did very well on the exam, but I got one question wrong. And it had to do with the difference between precision and accuracy.
Nice.
Okay? And because I got it wrong on the test, I will never forget for the rest of my life the difference between accuracy and precision. So the same thing here. Okay, you got to make a few mistakes along the way. And that's how you learn some of the
Yeah, well, be thankful it's not broadcast in high definition across the world, but still.
So what was the point? I forgot what the point was.
No, the point was that it's a challenge. You do a lot of, you have a lot of fun. You have a lot of responsibility. You need to concentrate. You need to, every play, you need to have a few... Like when somebody is throwing the ball, you need to look and say, okay, there's a player on first, so there might be a player at the second. There might be a catch. You need to watch if he tags or if he doesn't. You need to think about if there's a... You need to have a set of things you need to look for. When the ball is on the ground, you immediately need to think, okay, do I need to focus if it leaves the ground before the... You need to have a set of things, and then... After you have those in the machsanit, I don't know, in the stack, then the game actually develops and you adjust accordingly. Okay, this guy, he caught the ball, but he interfered with the runner. So is that a double play, or is that okay, or maybe the runner was at fault, and so on and so forth.
So I think you have to come prepared. So the way you become prepared is. Not to just because your buddy said something, that's the rule, or because your coach in high school said this is the rule. You need to be able to cite a rule.
Right.
So, for example, when there's a guy's on first and he rounds second, but then it turns out the ball was foul.
Right.
Okay? Now, we know that runner can just run directly to first and take his place again.
Right.
But how do you know that?
Right.
You have to be able to cite the rule.
Right.
Because there are other places where, for example, if the same runner is stealing, comes around second, but now there's a line drive to short, the batter's out, and he tries to double him up at first. The ball now goes out of play, okay?
Right.
Okay, so since it went out of play, he's awarded two bases.
Mm-hmm.
He's awarded third. So the umpire says, you can go to third.
Right.
Okay, so he doesn't go back to first.
No.
He goes directly to third.
Right.
But that would be wrong, and the other team can appeal. Because the rules say that he has to retouch his base. And there's no rule that says, well, if it goes out of play, you don't have to retouch your bases and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you have to be able to cite the rule.
Yeah,
so that's the first thing. You have to come prepared and don't buy into myths and what you heard.
And you listen to broadcasters who've been players for 20 years and broadcasters for 30 years, and they still say stuff like a tie goes to the runner, right, which it obviously isn't, because the rule specifically says you have to be touch the base in before the ball gets to the thing. So a tie goes to the fielder, not to the runner.
Right. Generally, broadcasters and certainly players don't know the rules.
Yeah.
Although the broadcasters, I think, are getting slightly better.
Some of them are still ridiculous.
I don't know. I think, you know, the influence of John Boy and YouTube and all kinds of things.
Oh, John Boy.
Right. We'll get to John Boy. So the second thing is just experience, right? It'll take time. So it's okay to make a mistake, and you have to be willing to make a mistake. Because if you don't do anything, you don't really learn. Like, if you're shy and I'm worried about making a mistake, you don't learn.
The good thing, I think, is that in Israel, well, I don't know other local leagues, but in Israel, if you're a beginner, they would give you much, they will cut you more slack. You see the ire and the brimstone coming towards the senior guys, you, David.
Right. Sometimes what happens is I'm behind the plate and there's a less experienced person in the field.
Right.
And the less experienced person will make a call, they want to argue about it, they'll come to me.
Right.
And I hate that. And I will tell them, I didn't make the call. Talk to the guy who made the call.
Right.
And I will...
I thought the other way, because he's is less experienced, it will be easier to argue with him. Because he doesn't have enough authority. So he can go like, you know what?
Yeah, but you know how it is. I mean, I don't know. Again, Israeli guys, they usually come to the boss. I want the manager. And you're the crew chief. You're the manager.
Yeah, so have a bite.
Yeah, exactly.
So they'll come to me. But that's important for people who want to become umpires and are newbies. Right. But I'm not going to shield you. I mean, we're a team, and
there's a fight, you're gonna help.
Of course. There's a fight, I will come in.
If you shield me, I'm good. I mean,
but it's part of the skill that you need is to be able to talk to the coach. And so if I do it, you don't learn how to do it. So you have to be willing to take the heat a little bit.
Sounds amazingly fun, and I wish I could do it. I wish I could be an umpire. Unfortunately, my knees are shot, and I can't bend.
Oh, you have the job of your own already.
Yeah, well, I have my. That's what I did.
You should broadcast and ump at the same time.
Yeah,
that could be nice.
Yeah, I wish I could. I mean, I do the. I found something I can do sitting.
Did you hear? I'm working with Peter now.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna have cameras.
Oh,
body cameras!
Like very, you know, like a police have, right?
Right.
These cameras that are, and then we can broadcast or analyze afterwards.
You're fired.
Yeah. No, if we can only find a way to sync them into the broadcast.
So I just want to go back on one thing you said.
Yes.
And to remind people about the umpire course and how much fun it. The thing about umpiring that's even better than playing the game is that you're in the game 100%, right?
Right.
Guy comes up to bat, he bats, I don't know, he flies out, he gets on the bench, he's on the bench for the next 20 minutes.
Right.
Okay? The umpire is in every play.
He's the only one.
What's that?
He's the only one.
Right.
In the game, right? Sometimes, like, you know, the catchers are complaining, or they get hurt, or whatever, and it's like, you know, and then they start arguing with me, you know, and... Okay, I'm you know, in the crouch position behind the plate, 300 pitches, right? The catcher half as much, right? Yeah.
Right.
And I got to make decisions, you know, split second decisions.
You don't have bullpen, you know.
I don't have
no relief coming.
No bench players.
I don't have a relief. So it's really, you know, being really really being in the game.
I mean, speaking of being really in the game, I mean, you were told by a coach of the other team that you have your actions in the game have brought shame to you to your country and to your people. So not only as an as a baseball umpire, as a Jew, and as an Israeli, you have your action of broke chain. How many things can you do in your life, Yoni, can bring shame to you as a person?
בן שלך ישחוט אותך ביום הולדת שלך, יא אבו ג'ילדו שכמוך.
Exactly. How many, I mean, I've never done anything that brought shame to myself as a person, to myself as a Jew, and to myself as an Israeli. I mean, that's like something to aspire. People climb the Everest. You brought shame to entire Jewish people.
Just by saying strike.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't. I wasn't.
You looked at him and you smiled and you moved on. And I'm like, dude,
you were there, I guess.
Yeah,
I wasn't aware of the coach, and he said all that. There was a player. I was leaving the field. I was down the right field line,
the game was over, and the player came over.
Like a player had to go way out of his way to come to me, and he just screamed at me, and I'm terrible, and I don't even know. I don't even know what he was complaining about, because you could dispute this call or that call, but there was nothing significant that happened.
About, you know, somebody's life.
Talking about, you know, what was the play?
But I don't feel so bad, because they also complained about Freddie. So
there was a weird tournament. They brought in teams from United States, and they originally were supposed to represent the place, and then it turns out they mixed and matched, so it was like blue team versus red team versus white team versus thing team, and those guys had brought the most obnoxious coaches ever. They complained about anything and everything. Their players were basically, you know, MLB ready. There's just the age thing that prevented them from, you know, making millions. So obviously, every time you call them doing something wrong, they would run out of the benches, and at one point they will have to be told, listen, go back. I'm not making a good pitch for selling this, but that was a rare occasion, I think. You usually have much friendlier people to deal with.
It didn't bother me. I mean, you make mistakes. The worst mistakes that you make, or the worst feeling you have, is when you think you made the mistake, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, some guy... really, even if I had made the most horrendous mistake, this guy was way out of line.
It didn't really affect me.
You need to have a character to move on.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's not
everybody can do it, you know?
I think that's the thing. That's the thing about umpiring, which some would say, okay, that's not for me, and some would say, wow, because we said it's a challenge, there is you need a character for it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, again, about the physical thing, you'd still need to go on field and stand there for a couple of hours and have the rules and have focus. I think that if you can do it, it's one of the most rewarding thing you can do, because you basically are bringing your A game to... You're doing something which normal people can look at you and say, my God, I would never be able to do that. You know, the mental, the intellectual, and the physical aspect of it, and the person and the interpersonal thing.
So first of all, I think almost anybody can do it. I mean, you have to have a little bit of a strong personality, right? You can't be passive, but that's true of just most anything that you do.
So I upsell it, and he's underselling it,
right?
No.
Good advertiser, bad advertiser.
Wait. Oh,
I'm not saying it's for the Yechidei Segula, Yodei Chen, and the thing. I'm just saying it's a great challenge. It's not something you can do, you know, like that. You need to work at it.
You need to work at it. Give it some time,
right?
Experience and experience, and you have to have a little bit of a
passion, of
a passion or a personality that's willing to be in the limelight a little bit.
And you need to know English.
And you need to know English. Although we had a really good umpire. I don't know if you remember Sagi.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've tried to get him back. I thought he was quite good. So he spoke for the most part. But just to finish, so it's a really exciting thing to do. And you're in the game the whole time. But it's also something that is important to the league. For the IAB.
Right.
Because you really can't have a baseball game without an umpire. Yeah. Okay, the umpire should be somewhat invisible and not be part of the game and let the two teams fight it out. But really, in the end of the game, the umpire is what makes it all possible.
Exactly. And if you don't have good umpires in the low levels, the players will not learn that they make mistakes. They would skid and get into higher levels with no fundamentals because there was nobody to enforce the rules. so they need to have somebody professional, and that way we can have better players, and then when they get to the higher levels, they would have the great umpires that we will have to make the game better. The only, you have to be very great, it's like with the, everything else, you have to work very hard to be unnoticed. So you have so the only way to not notice the umpire is if he is really good.
So I mean, I invite people to reach out to you or to reach out to Daniel
at baseball.org.il.
You know, again, we'll have three sessions on the field, and you can start umpiring right away.
Already somebody and was recruited for those sessions? Like, you guys are going to come to those sessions already?
You mean that people have signed up?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people have signed up. I think we have seven or eight people already signed up.
That's amazing.
But it's, you know, it's still a month away.
So before we leave you, we have, we like to challenge our guests. Mm-hmm. And now Yoni will bring a lineup, which you need to guess. You have to know, you have to tell us which year was this?
In between 98 and yesterday.
And yesterday. So who were the teams? What year was it? What was the score? Who are the umpires? And what happened in the eighth innings?
There's a thing in this game.
And yeah, you only like to have things in this game.
Yeah, so there's something special.
Okay.
Okay. So the away team started with a center fielder named Gerald Williams. Okay.
Mm.
They had at second base Miguel Cairo.
Oh, that's okay.
The DH was Jose Canseco.
Oh.
First base, Fred McGriff. That's a good team.
The crime dog.
That's a good team. Left field, Greg Vaughn. Third base, Herbert Perry. I don't know him. John Flaherty was the catching.
Oh my God, it's like...
He's a Yankee broadcaster now. Mm-hmm. Bubba Trammell was right field. Yeah, it was pinch-hitted with Dave Martinez. And Kevin Stocker was playing at short. This team's starting pitcher was Ray Rope, and it was relieved by Jimmy Messier, Albie Lopez, and Roberto Hernandez.
You know,
you know this team?
Because I know those players, but I have no idea where they play together.
Yeah. There are a lot of
and ideas. It's okay.
Journey guys, there are a lot of journey guys here.
It's okay. Usually the guests I know much more about baseball than both of us, but it's okay if you have no idea.
No idea.
I would say it sounds like the Astros.
That's your pick?
Yeah.
It's the Tampa Bay Rays.
All right.
No, it's the Tampa Bay team, okay?
Okay.
It's the Tampa Bay team.
The Tampa Bay Devil Rays. No, but it is very, very early in the...
Yeah, Jose Canseco is here.
Yeah, it's very early in the
Fred McGriff. The other team started...
Fred McGriff was the crime dog.
The crime dog.
Now we remember. Because I keep thinking, why is this name is familiar? A lot of names are familiar, but the name was...
You know why?
Yeah, because there was a cartoon called The Crime Dog, and the name of the character was McGruff.
Mm.
McGruff. So McGriff and
he was
McGruff.
Elected last year for the Hall of Fame, McGriff.
He was nominated?
He was elected from one kind of... not like their usual door. One other door.
The other girl.
Yeah, I decided.
As long as they don't recognize my players, I don't recognize them. Yes, you're right. He's a Hall of Famer.
Okay, so
was
the other
Fred
team.
McGruff or just McGruff, the dog?
Just
McGruff.
That's too much for
McGruff.
The other team started with a second baseman named Todd Walker.
Oh.
The shortstop was Christian Guzman.
Mm.
Matt Lawton played right field. David Ortiz was the first baseman.
I was about to say it sounds Bostonish, but wait a minute. Okay.
The aging Butch Husky. Corey Koski was playing third. Jacques Jones left field. Marcus Jensen catching.
It's not a
Torrey Hunter center field.
What was he
Torrey
before?
Hunter was supposed to give his
sign. Yeah, is that the Twins, I think? Where was Ortiz before that? Twins or
and
the
starter
or
was Eric Milton. And afterwards came Bob Wells, Travis Miller, and Hector Carrasco.
Either the Indians or the Twins. I just don't remember. I would say Twins.
You're right.
All right.
You're right.
And but it's funny because before just it's funny because before you said what's his face, David Ortiz, I was like, that sounds Red Sox-ish, and then before, he came,
yeah,
and I'm like, oh, it's the Red Sox. Early. But wait a minute, yeah, first base. He only played first base when they were doing interleague.
Yeah, and it's too early for him to be in Boston.
So, well, obviously it's very late 90s, early 2000s. I think we have a four-year window, 98 to 2002. So I'm going to say it's smack down in the middle, 2000.
It's a good one.
All right.
And the ump.
The umps.
The ump was C.B. Buckner.
Oh, my God.
In his first American League game.
That's why you chose
that's the thing. Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's the thing. I was looking for something umping to put here.
All right. That is very, very fun. well, that's been fun. Obviously, Daniel, you are very, very welcome to come to us again now that you know where we are. But please, you know,
This place is really well hidden.
Yeah, I know. That's studio. Why we like it.
We're trying.
I mean, it's. I mean, the good thing about you is that you're easy to spot in the area. So Yoni could find you when we sent him searching.
A lot of the Grum people going around here.
Yeah. There's a tall religious guy with a Grum shirt. It has to be you. All right. We will. How do you say? You know, in baseball, we don't know where the game ends. But unlike Israeli baseball, when you do have a clock. But we always have a clock ticking. It's not ticking, it's just here. And we know when the game is, when the broadcast ends. And it will be immediately after I will tell you who were the... Oh, we have two, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
So Joe Girardi and somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Who beat a team in the World Series and later managed them. So we have Bucky Harris, Frankie Frisch, and Johnny Keane. You chose, Daniel, you chose Frisch. Johnny, you chose Harris. I betted on Keane. We know Joe Girardi beat the Phillies and then managed them. And the winner is... I don't believe this. So the Girardi managed the Yankees against the Phillies, and then he hired to manage the Phillies. Johnny Keane piloted the Cards to a 7-game series against the Yankees, and then the Yankees fired Yogi Berra.
Of course,
Keane refused the Cards' contract offer, and the Yankees hired him 4 days later.
And then fired him.
Well, that's 65, by the way.
Oh,
before Steinbrenner started firing everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Wait, who picked Keane?
The Yankees.
No, you. It was your name.
It's not the Jewish guy.
It's not the Jewish
guy. I did. That's you. That's what I said. Nice. I don't believe it. I just threw up.
Way to go, Erez.
Yeah, we're having fun. Tomorrow is Johnny Bench's birthday. Right. Oh, by the way, your favorite player.
Who's that?
Other than Ron Swoboda.
The Gram? Who?
No, Reggie I'm asking, Jackson? Who is your favorite player?
I was a big DeGrom fan, but that bandwagon wasn't very long.
Well, let's just say you can still be a DeGrom fan. He didn't really do anything in the Rangers.
And of course, I think Reggie Jackson was just very exciting. I like Bryce Harper too. I just think he just has an attitude that's really great. Yeah, sometimes it's overboard and he's obnoxious, but
yeah,
I don't know. He just plays the game with such heart. It's really amazing.
Well. I think the Grom, Reggie Jackson, and Bryce Harper, somewhere in there is a great
nice Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. and Ron Swoboda, of course. All right, so we will finish here. ניתן למצוא אותנו באתר baseballpodcast.co.il או ביוטיוב, youtube.com/strudelacosterhotdog. תוכלו למצוא את הפודקאסט באפל, פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי ובכל האפליקציות. דרגו אותנו וכו, פרגנו, 5 כוכבים. What do you think about our good friend Chaim Katz?
Chaim Katz,
yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
No, I'm just saying he's our executive producer. We thank him profusely every time. He went to a gynecologist, and no, not for himself, because he wanted to talk to him about his wife. And he says, listen, is your wife allergic to anything? He said, oh, yeah, it's to dust. I said, okay, but is she allergic to any medicine? I said, well, if the pill is dusty.
Nice.
All right.
All right.
Nice. I try.
You have better ones.
I have better ones. Maybe next week. טוב, ניתן להמשיך את הדיון בפייסבוק או באתר המאזרשיפ שלנו, הופסיריאל. בייסבול ממש ממש מסתיים, מזל טוב למכבי עלייה ול-U-Select U18.
Okay.
ובאופן מדהים, שבוע הבא יהיה לנו פה את המאמן של ה-U18, פרדי בייטס.
לחגוג את האליפות.
ששבוע אחרי יהיה פה הבעלים וה-CEO של מכבי עלייה, AJ, שיחגוג אולי את האליפות.
אנחנו חוגגים בשבועיים הקרובים אליפות.
בדיוק, okay. יוני, משהו לא, מה לפני שסוגנים?
שבת שלום לכולם.
Thank you, Daniel, for coming
Thank
here.
Thank you for having
and,
me.
Again, great success in your endeavor. It's we support Israeli baseball, and we thank you for listening to A Kosher Hot Dog with Yoni Leverby and Erez Schatz. Baseball Tov Israel.
Yalla, bye.
Swung and a drill to right field, doing back Sanders, on the track, at the wall, see ya, see ya, see ya, a home run.
Did you know I was apparently, I was, they said, and I want to clarify that, the reason I didn't broadcast last season was completely personal. I started a new job, and the weird schedule was not really conducive. It was not the reason that I said I can't do the Game Changer, and the Igud told me, listen, if you're not doing something official in the game, we can't compensate you. And I didn't say, okay, then I don't come at all. And so
Bro, that's such an Erez thing to do.
It is?
No.
All right. Yo, I mean, I came, and people say, "Oh, listen, we heard there was heat, and you parted with the game in a door slide." I'm
oh,
like,
man.
Dude,
who said that?
Never mind. Oh, okay. A lot of people thought, and I was like very surprised. Well, it's not a genius. It's Shimon Chimlecha.
Can I'm talking?
Okay. You know, I have a daily discussion with him. We talk a lot of things, and if I can only open
every day,
yeah. Every day I talk to him, and
twice,
and you see the all right. So, I don't know. Is that kvar?
No.
Okay. So,
Yamit Alpine.
Yeah. So now the thing is,